Blog Talk Radio.
Heart Talk with Miss E, and welcome to our second weekly broadcast for this month in acknowledgement of National Foster Care Awareness Month. As I shared with you last week, this is one of my most exciting months of the year, and especially with new technology, I've had the opportunity to connect with so many people working in the field of foster care, and especially so many foster care alumni. It's just been amazing, the connections that have been made, the stories I've been able to hear, the triumphs over coming so many different obstacles and still being victorious. And I just want to give a shout-out to those members of the former Foster Youth Little Rascals Facebook, the Foster Care Alumni Association, Fostering Resilience, Trials to Triumphs, and by most of course, our sponsor for this month from our guest from last week, Mr. Chris, and I don't have the phonetic spelling in front of me, so I'm just going to say Chris from Foster Focus Magazine. We want to thank Foster Focus for being our sponsor for the whole month of May, and you can take a look at their magazine at www.fosterfocusmag.com. So tonight's guest is someone that, as you know, most of the times, very few people do I meet that I don't bring it to my heart. But this young man, I have to tell him, he is a young man after my own heart. And, you know, me being the maternal one, want to just be able to grasp on everything. I was trying to take care of him before he got off the phone. But I could tell he's used to that. He's very endearing. And if you had an opportunity to take a look at our announcements, you can read through all of the details, but I'm just going to read some of the sketches that really stood out to me. Basically, it says, aptly named because of his ability to jump and slam dunk. And what I did not mention, his name is Mr. Courtney Laquan, known as the Jumpman Castro. So aptly named for his ability to jump and slam dunk, this Brooklyn, New York native is a refined product of a young man who has jumped through many hoops to achieve his goals, and is a great example of how one can overcome seemingly unsurmountable obstacles. Not only has he overcome the mental and emotional challenges as a child and youth through the maze of foster care, but at a mere 5'11", 185 pounds, he is living proof that you don't have to be big to make a big impact. But what I am even more proud of to be able to say, even though he's a sports star, sports fanatic, he furthered his education and excelled academically as well. He has an associate's degree from Navarro College in Texas, and he went on to receive his bachelor's degree in special education at Elizabeth City State University. So not only is he an accomplished player, he's an outstanding student. He has gone on to play with the Harlem Wizards, one of the greatest basketball show teams, featuring some of the top talents in the world. And in addition to his many other interests, he has taken up modeling, as because he appeared in a Nike commercial. So he's trying his hand at modeling and acting. And when he's not doing all of these things, you can find him mentoring, you can find him teaching, And he is just a man that's using all of his talents, and I am just so pleased to announce and to introduce you to Mr. Courtney Laquan Jumpman Castro.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Can't complain. I'm pretty good. Pretty good.
Really
I'm
good.
Excited.
Yes, I am too. And I know probably most of your teammates and your partners refer to you as Castro or Jumpman, but I think it's okay with you if I just say Courtney.
Courtney's cool.
Okay. You know where that comes from, right?
Yeah.
But I might refer back and forth, but either way, I'll call you whatever you want me to call you because I'm just so glad that you have accepted the call to be on this call and to share your awesome story. So I understand that you were in foster care for 13 years, pretty much.
Since I was 2 years old, I was in and out like about 7 to like 8 different foster homes. You know, the reason there's so much of the movement was because, you know, like child abuse, molestation, there's more abuse and more abuse. So it's just, you know, everywhere I went, you know, somebody was doing something different that wasn't right in the system. So, you know, I kept on being moved to each home and different homes.
Wow. Now, did you have any of your biological, were you the only child in your family to go into care?
No, I had a younger brother. He was in there since he was an infant, but he stayed at one foster home for like 6 years because, you know, I guess the lady that he had, you know, she had him since birth. So, you know, he really thought that was his mom. So pretty much, you know, he stayed there the whole entire time, you know, until we got together in the foster home that we are in today.
Wow. So he stayed there through 6 years at one home, and then they placed him for adoption in another home.
Yes.
Okay, wow. Okay, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that. So you mentioned, you know, a lot of the things that happened to you in the care of the system that was supposed to be protecting you, more things happened to you there. Did you ever get the understanding of why you were originally removed from your biological parents?
Yeah, my mom was a drug abuser. She was cocaine, crack. Dad was, you know, robbing train styles, token booths, you know, back in his days. So, you know, I guess two couldn't reconcile with each other. And moms, when I see my moms, one time I seen her at, I went, you know, I was to visit on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
I seen her at a Grand Central train station on 42nd Street. And she, you know, she looked at me, started crying. She's like, you know, I can't see you like this. I want to be better. I want to take care of y'all and everything. I told her it would be all right that I'd take care of her. And that was the last time I seen her. I think it was like about 4 years old. And my dad to this day asked me, how do I remember? It's just, you know, I guess certain things stick with you. So, you know, that was the last time I seen her when she was 4 years old.
Wow. When you were four?
Yeah, when I was 4 years old.
Yeah, wow. So throughout all of these homes, at the age of 13, you were able to acquire some stability. And
yes.
Do you remember when you went into that last home?
Yeah, I was about 8 years old. You know, from 2 to 8, I was in like 7 different foster homes. So that's almost practically every year I had a new family.
Mm-hmm.
And until I got to one home, I was there for like about 2 to 3 years. Is where all the how I may call it the Antoine Fisher abuse happened to me about 3 years. And when I was in the Bronx, and we met this lady. Her name is Sandra Shipp, which is my mom now. Which she adopted me. She brought me and my brother together because you know, she knew that we were separated for a long time, and she said there was something about my picture that she liked. So I guess she said when she finally met us, you know, my brother wasn't much of a talker, so I was talking, doing all the talking, and she's like, and to this day, she's like, if it wasn't because of you, I would have never got adopted by me. So she started laughing because she said, because I charmed her up, you know, I was talking as if, you know, I spoke my mind, you know. You know, I was just always a happy child at the time, I guess, so.
Wow.
But,
so even after going through everything that you had been through, you were still able to shine your light for somebody to recognize.
Yeah, somehow, some way, you know, I guess it did shine through.
Mm-hmm.
So
you went to her when you were 8, and so was it at that point, just a
In the beginning, yes, it was. I was like, okay, I'm not moving. I want to stay here. You know, is it okay? Can I call your mom? Because, you know, everybody I went to, you know, they didn't want me to call them mom, or I had to wait a certain amount of time to call the mom, or you better not call me your mom because I'm not your mom. So it's like, you know, I had to ask her. She's like, sure, it's okay. And I guess, you know, like I said, I thought everything was, you know, it was pretty well. So, you know, but then, you know, at the end of the day, I guess the rebellions and all the other things came in handy. So it just, you know, I was just not the perfect child, but like I said, it was just things that reminded me of other places that, you know, she had might have done or said or whatever that kind of got me to, you know, to do the things like the Dennis the Menace kind of thing. So, mm-hmm. you know, that had it, you know, on the rock. So after a while, and I said, you know, are we ever moving from here? She's like, no, you're here to stay forever. If, you know, as long as you want to stay. I said, sure. So my brother said he was good with it. And then as long as my brother wanted to stay, I was going to stay.
Wow. So
she adopted us. I didn't hear you say it again.
I said, so you guys are what, 2-3 years apart?
Yeah, a year and a half apart.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, he's 29 now. I'll be 31 in September. So, yeah, he's about a year and a half.
Okay. Okay. So, basically, you had a long, as we would call it in the adoption world, courtship. You got to
meet
very well before you said, I do.
Yeah, pretty much.
And she knew all of your flaws, all your strengths, all your areas for growth. I don't like to say weaknesses. And she knew all the areas, you know, where you were very sensitive, and she still made that commitment. And that is commendable, because there are so many of our young people, especially African-American males, who do not get adopted at an older age, because that is definitely considered an older adoption. So, and of course, my heart goes out, because that's, you know, part of my story as well. So you were saying that there were triggers, what I would refer to as triggers, things that would happen that would sort of send you back into some of that old behavior there. How did she handle those?
It was her first time adopting kids, so it was kind of, for her, it was a new experience for her too.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't really that easy for her. And so it was just like both of us, it was just like a first marriage. Like, you know, we don't know each other. You know, we try to get to know each other. And it was just the experience that just went on. It was ups and downs. It was like a relationship that we had that, you know, like a boyfriend and girlfriend type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the beginning, like I said, it was pretty well. And then after a while, like I said, when she got to know me, I got to know her, things I didn't like about her, things, you know, she didn't approve of me doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's when it got rocky. But then after a while, it got better to where now, like I said, we have a real strong bond right now.
Wow. Now, during your teenage years, even after the adoption, was there ever a period of time, you know, before you became an adult that you did not live with her?
Yes. About 13, after I got adopted, maybe a year after, I guess I went somewhere to ask somebody for some money, and then I got into some trouble with the Lord, and she was like, well, you know, I don't want you no more. And I looked at her like, what you mean you don't want me? And I was in a priest, and she said, well, yeah, I'm tired of dealing with this. I can't keep on missing days and blah, 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 so forth. And then from then on, that's when I started going into the group homes. And my first group home I went into was St. John's Diagnostic in Queens.
Mm.
And I was there for about 8 to 9, 10 months. And I honestly, I think that's where I learned and became a man at that time, about 13 years old.
Wow. Now, did you maintain contact? Did she maintain contact with you during the time that you were in the home?
I didn't hear you say it again.
Did the two of you maintain contact while you were at that home, at that group home?
Oh, yeah. Well, I went home on a home visit. I visited her, you know, and from time to time, I didn't go because I just didn't want to be bothered with her. So, you know, we're still getting into our little issues. Like I said, you know, knocking heads, bumping heads. So sometimes I just stayed at the group home, and I was better off at the group home. I enjoyed it being there.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm sure that there was a little bit more leniency there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well,
I know you didn't have Mama watching over your shoulder at the time, because you could always blame something on everybody else.
Right, right. There you go. Exactly. So you know how it is.
The beautiful part about that, though, is something that I try to stress to caregivers. She didn't totally throw in the towel. She maintained her commitment to you, even if it was under a different roof. And I think that was
right.
So important. And I think by the fact that you two have a much better relationship now, as you've gotten older and matured and come to appreciate certain things, that made a big difference. And that's really, I think adults don't realize how important that is. You just shift your location from and how you go about loving, because you knew that she was still in your life.
Yeah, definitely. I know she cared, but it's just, she was just on, like, you know, she was from a religious background, so she's Baptist. So, you know, at the end of the day, it was like church, home, school, that's it. No streets. You know, you got to be inside the house. You can't leave the front gate. You know, I couldn't deal with that. So I just, like, and I'm a boy. I don't want to be trapped up in a gate. I can't run, you know, from y'all, you know, from one side of the yard to the other side of the yard. That's not having fun. So I wanted to go out, you know, hang out with my friends and do this and do that, and she didn't approve of it. Her only approval was going to church, going home, going to church and going home, and back to church and then going home.
Wow. Now, this is a question that I have, actually it's a personal question, because I've worked in a group home. I have also, you know, fostered and had my own adopted son who had a similar experience as yours at about that same time, 13, 14. But I'm wondering, did you find, because in so many ways a group home is more restrictive in some aspects, didn't you have issues with the authority figures in the group home?
Honestly, I would say no.
Wow.
I don't know if it's just me. It's just because, I guess, like you said, I had that light about me. It was something about me, I guess, people just seeing that I wasn't like every other kid. So they're like, you know, you're not a bad kid. You're not. You know, you're not really a tough guy. You're not no thug. You're not no drug user. You're not no gangbanger. You just, you know, went through some stuff in your life that you had issues with that you got to learn how to deal with. So a lot of the staff that was there, you know, they took me as their own little son or their little brother, or they let me do things that, you know, they wouldn't let anyone else do. Like, oh, like if, you know, we have to come in the cottage by 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, they'll let me stay out to 9, 10, 11 o'clock, you know, with the girl, whoever I'm talking to or whoever I'm doing, and just make sure I come back at a certain time. So at the end of the day, you know, they gave me a lot of leaning, honestly, to be honest with you. Like I said, that's what made me become a man. You know, people started to trust me. People started, you know, giving me a little bit of responsibility at a young age. So
you had favor.
There you go. I had a lot of favor.
You had a lot of favor. And I think that a lot of times, you know, as some of us know in the T.D. Jakes sermon and series, is favor isn't fair. So I'm sure for some of the other young people that were in the group.
Oh, no, they didn't like it. No, at all. They didn't like it at all. Yeah, I had enemies at times, too. So, you know, I had a lot of guys turn against me at the end when I was about to leave. Like, people thought that I was setting people up and, you know, things like that. Because one incident that we had, they went to go rob a candy store. And the only reason why I went, because it was my favorite candy, but I did not rob the store. I'm going to be honest with you. This is the crazy part about it. They went there like, oh, we're going to go rob the candy store. I was like, all right, so, you know, we didn't care. We were going to go. So we ran down to the store. I was across the street the whole time. But the whole time I'm across the street, I'm talking to an undercover cop. I'm not even knowing. But he's asking me, like, you know, what are they doing? I said, I don't know what they're doing. They in there going to get some candy or whatever, whatever. So I'm talking. They all come running out. So after they run out, they run up in Dobbs Ferry. It's like in upstate New York. It's called the Aqueduct. I don't know. You've probably heard of it where he's, you know, bring the slaves back and forth. It's like an aqueduct that goes from like miles and miles and miles away. So we run on top of the aqueduct, and these cops come up and run, and they guns drawn, and, you know, we got guns in our face. I'm like, I just backed up. I was like, what? They're like, well, lay down. So I was the first person to get caught. So, you know, in the business of the law authority, they'll tell you, oh, the first person they caught is going to tell on everybody. So they went back and said that I snitched on everybody. I told everybody this. I told them this. And I never said anything, so at the end of the day, they all got mad at me and started, you know, going against me, thought that I stitched on them and stuff like that. So at the end of the day, I was just like, I'll leave it alone. I'm glad I didn't go in the store. I didn't get in no trouble. And for all the people that robbed the store, they all got in trouble because they told on themselves thinking that I said anything. So You know, it was just one thing to another, and then, you know, it was just one crazy experience of my life. I can say I've been through one of them.
Wow. That's amazing, and that doesn't even scratch the surface. So you went through all of that, and I appreciate you sharing that because there are still some aspects of that period in my life with my sons that I'm still not totally clear upon, even though I work with young people all the time. But, you know, the story is slightly different, and so I'm hearing a little bit more of what you're saying. I'm curious to know, was your adoptive mom a single parent?
Yes, she was.
Okay. So I think that has probably some aspects to it, too, that balance, you know, between that male energy was probably also present in the group homes as well. And the
I had an older brother. She had an older son, so she, like, I had an older brother and an older sister. So, you know, I kind of looked up to my older brother, too, as a, you know, as a role model type situation.
Okay.
Because he's the one that really introduced me into basketball and everything else.
Okay. So you were doing basketball even at that point in your life?
About 12, 13, yeah. That's when I knew I could jump high.
All right.
Yeah, the first time I dunked the ball was about 12 or 13 years old. When I was in a group home, we had a game, and it was like the gym was crowded. The ball came off the rim, and I was like nowhere, no more than like, 5'8", maybe 5'9", and I just jumped in the air at that time and dunked the ball, and after that I never stopped.
Wow. So you did you know that you were onto something at that point?
I knew I could do something because everybody kept on wanting me to play with them, so I knew I could do something. Like,
Okay. Before we move on to talk about the next phase of your life, one of my questions is, you talked about the abuse, both the physical, the emotional, and the sexual abuse that you endured during those early years going to all of those foster homes. And I'm wondering, were you provided any type of counseling or therapy to address those issues before you went into the group home?
Yes, I talked to one therapist, if I'm not mistaken. I should sit there. I told her, you know, how, you know, she'll ask me questions, and I guess she'll write it down, and same thing week after week after week. But, I mean, I talked about it. At times it made me feel good because sometimes I didn't have nobody to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
So, so what I did was, you know, I explained to her, you know, tell her what I'm going through, how am I feeling, what is going on with me, and, you know, just the normal routine that you go through when you're, you know, seeing a therapist. But, I mean, did it help me? It helped me a little bit, so it kind of, like, helped the anger not come out all the time. So
okay.
She told me, you know, times not to get angry at this or get upset at that. And that's why I used to ask her questions, like, how am I supposed to get angry? Why should I get angry?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but she couldn't answer it because she had never been through nothing that I've been through. So she was just going by, I guess, experience and books and things that she read. So it was like, I always tell people, like, at the end of the day, you really don't get into business working with kids or people that's been abused or people that, you know, that's been through something. I feel that you should have been through it or gone through something similar to help someone else out, because if you've never been through it, you can't tell somebody it's going to be okay, or, you know, this is what you need to do, or this is like a marriage couple, or like a marriage counselor that never been married, but you're telling two people to marry what to do. You know what I'm saying? So.
Wow. And actually, I've heard that one before, too. But
yes.
I think the bottom line, though, is for people who really are not afraid of emotions. And I think different experiences can bring us to a similar place emotionally, that you can actually make that connection. And that's why everything with me is about the heart and making a heart connection. Because I think you can understand and validate someone's feelings and help them to be able to articulate those to, like you said, to a certain degree, if you come from a place of the heart rather than just in your head. And one of the reasons I do this broadcast and the television, because I know, as much as I love the young people that I work with, some things I cannot get it across, so I look to young people such like yourself to be able to put additional information from a personal perspective to validate other people and to give them a sense of encouragement and hope. So creating the platform to do so.
Yes,
so how old were you when you left the group home?
I thought when I moved out, like I said, when I first went to my mom's house, well, after I left my mom's house, I was 13. I came back home around, because I went to two different group homes before I came back home at 15. We got into an issue again, knockheads. And then from 15 on, I was practically in group homes. I never came back home, honestly, until college, honestly. So I had my own apartment by the time I was, I lived because I was another apartment underneath my mom's house that I had. So I was underneath my mom for like a baby a year or so, but she was still coming downstairs and bothering me and checking me about in the church and stuff like that. So I actually had to get up and get out to like move out, like, you know, away from her. So, you know, but then my sister was diagnosed with cancer around, I think I was 18. No, I was 17. She was 18. And the year following year, I think my 18th birthday, we both was having stomach pain, I think, simultaneously. And then found out, you know, I took some Pepto-Bismol, I was good to go, and she took it, stomach was still in pain. She went to Kings County Hospital and found out that she had cancer.
Mm.
So I was like, and that's my first experience. I didn't know what it really was or how dangerous it could be or what's the effect that it could happen to a person.
Mm-hmm.
Until it really hit my sister. And from then on, like, my sister, she found out she wasn't coming home or she started losing all her hair, things like that. So she got to where she was getting, like, so sick and real sick. It's like, I just dropped out of school, didn't want to go to school no more. And I'd be in the hospital almost, like, every single day. And to some of the nurses, like, look, you know, you love your sister, you care for your sister. You know, we'll open up a bed and a room for you here. You could go to school here. And you know, they were trying to open up and, you know, because I was there, like, mostly every day. I was spending nights. So it was, like, times that nobody knows I was there when she was, I mean, like, throwing up all the stuff, all the, you know, chemo, green, I mean, just everything that she had. So I was there from, like, I was with her from her sickest points to her happiest point. And she was always happy every time she see me there. So it's like, you know, and she's like, no, you can go home. I know you're trying to be here with me. I'm like, no, it's never that. I'm here for you and you need, let me know. So it's like I was there for her, you know, there with her, you know, like 24/7. So, you know.
Wow. So you were a senior in high school at this time?
No, I was a sophomore. And when I dropped out of school.
Okay. Now, did you emancipate? How did you get an apartment on your own at that age?
I had a couple of lady friends that used to help me out. So, so you know, I had a lady friend that.
So you were trying to be a young player.
if that's what you call it, I guess so. But she had, like, what it was, she was, I met her when I was at work at Baker's. And she's just like, you know, it's like, you know, I understand what you're going through with your sister. You know, if you need anything, let me know. And she worked at a big time law firm out here, you know, at a young age. So she was making pretty good money. And, you know, so she was really helping me out a lot.
Okay.
And then, yeah, so then from then on, you know, like I said, that's who really was really helping me because the apartment back then, about 10 years ago, wasn't that much. So for a room, I had like a kitchenette. So it was like I was paying like $400 a month.
Okay.
And now it's more, much more than that. So back then it wasn't that bad. So it was like $400 a month. So it wasn't really that bad, you know. Nothing, no humongous place I had. But it was, you know, it was mine. I could call it mine, you know.
All right. So this was during your sophomore year. You're living downstairs from your adoptive mom.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And this was her biological daughter who was ill.
No, it was my sister.
This is your biological sister.
She adopted her too, yeah.
Okay. Oh, wow. She really had her hands filled. Bless her heart.
Yeah.
How long was your sister actually hospitalized and ill? Did she go through the illness?
Well, she only lived for a year after this.
Okay.
So
everything else, this was like something huge after everything else you had been through. How did that whole experience change your life and your focus?
I guess because I had a lot of mountains to climb. So when, you know, my sister was telling me, like, you know, just make sure you push forward, whatever, whatever. So as soon as she died, it was just like everything out of me just came right out. So I just looked at it like, you know, what should I do now? And then people was telling me, oh, you're never going to graduate high school. You're going to be nothing. You're going to be a loser. You're going to be this. You're going to be that. So at the end of the day, I looked at it like, you know what? I have something to prove.
Mm.
And I felt that if people didn't down me and didn't push me and say that I wasn't going to be nothing, I probably wouldn't be where I'm at today if people didn't say or do what they think. So I thank all my haters and people that doubted me all my life, you know, to get me as far as I did today. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to go back to school. So I went back to school when I was 19 years old because I was going to get my GED. And this coach that I had, he said, you sure you want to get your GED? I said, why shouldn't I? I mean, it's easy. It's 1, 2, 3. He said, well, that means you didn't even graduate. I said, what you mean? He said, you spell it backwards. It means you didn't even graduate. I said, oh, okay. So that even motivated me more. So I went to school for 1 year in high school, and I passed all my tests that I needed to pass. And I got my high school diploma. And I showed my mom, and she was surprised because at the time we wasn't really talking that well because she would just, you know, think that I was in the streets running around, not going to school, not becoming, you know, not really doing what I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So when I finally graduated, she was so happy for me, and she was just, like, surprised, like, you know, you went to school, you did what you had to do. Wow, I'm surprised. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you. So I called the coach that I knew in Texas, and I told him I graduated, and the next thing you know, he called the coach in Texas, and the Texas coach didn't even see me play. Sent me a full scholarship to play for the next following that August.
Wow! Now, was getting the scholarship something that you had talked about before? Was that somewhat of a goal for you?
No, it definitely was, because when I was younger, I used to always tell my mother when we used to argue. My mom, that my mom is now, I used to always argue with her. She like, I was like, watch, you're never gonna have to pay for school with me. She like, yeah, whatever. That's if you even go to school. That's if you, you know, like I said, you know, we're going back and forth at each other. And then I told her, I said, watch, I'm going to go to school and nobody's going to have to pay for school for me. She's like, yeah, whatever. We'll see. You know how parents do, like, oh, dad, mom, I'll be a millionaire. You're like, yeah, whatever. Uh-huh, sure you are. Like, you know, so I believed in myself. And then, like, a lot of things that I've always said to myself that I was going to do, it has happened. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I just believed in it. Like, I'm going to go to school and nobody's going to have to pay for it. I'm going to get a scholarship. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do what I'm going to have to do. And when I got that scholarship in my hand, the first person to see, I showed my mom. So what did I tell you? She started laughing. She's like, you did say it. I'm like, I know I did. So what my reward was, she took me to before the World Trade Center fell, maybe a month before the World Trade Center fell, I was up on 105th floor. It's called the Windows of the World. I had my graduation dinner in there.
Oh, how special. How special.
Yeah,
and you know,
I
you said, I really want to emphasize, because I'm continually talking to young and old alike about affirmations and speaking things into existence and using vision boards and visualization, because there is so much to what we speak and what we believe that we bring things happen. And, you know, even, and I know that also your faith is something that's important to you as well. And so people may say, you know, it's the law of the universe. Some people say, you know, that's what scripture says. But there is profound truth in that. And I really, if no one gets anything else on this call, is to remember to speak positive things over yourself. So you did that, and you truly believed it, and you achieved it. So that's exciting.
Yes, I did.
Now, let me ask you this, because even though you were having a difficult time with your mom, and you said you wanted to prove people wrong, but was there a part of you that also wanted to make her proud?
I'm a type of person. I don't like to, like, no one to really down-talk me or think bad of me, because, like I said, I believe I have a great heart. And
mm-hmm.
I don't believe in doing people wrong, and I believe in, you know, and people believing in, you know, believing in me and trusting in me, you know, even though I had that problem growing up. So it was like, I guess I was the totally opposite. You know, I didn't want to be, you know, the jackal in the hives, you know, just like, if it did me wrong, I'm going to do somebody else wrong. Or people don't trust me, I'm not going to trust nobody else. Or people did me this way, I'm going to do people that way. Like, no, I wanted to be the opposite. Like, you know, I want people to believe in me. I want people to trust in me. I want people to say, you know what, I'm proud of him. No matter what he's been, he's still this great, nice person, you know?
Yes, so. I love that. Now, let me ask you this question, because I have encountered many adults who call themselves using reverse psychology like that and talking down to someone, thinking that, okay, well, this is going to give them the incentive or the motivation to prove me wrong. What are your thoughts about that?
At the end of the day, you won't be as happy if you try to prove somebody wrong, you know, because it's like, okay, you proved them wrong, now what? The person's still going to talk negative about you. They're still going to do this. They're still going to do that. Like, so what? You did this. Now you're happy. Now what? Now show me the next. You know what I mean? So they're not going to be happy because you proved them one thing wrong, you know? They're going to want to keep on seeing it. Like I said, we want $1 million. But if we could get two, of course we're going to take two. If we want $3 million, we're going to keep on wanting more and more and more. As a human race, that's how we are. We want as much as we can take. So at the end of the day, by you trying to prove somebody wrong every single time, you're going to be doing that all your whole entire life. So I feel like at the end of the day, do not try to prove nobody wrong. Just, as long as you're happy with yourself, I don't care if you have a Pinto and a wooded house and a homemade pool in your backyard. If you're happy, then you're happy. You shouldn't care what no one else say. And that's how I always live. Like, you know, at the end of the day, I want to do it for me, because I just want to show, like, look, if I don't grow up and be something myself, I'm going to look back and not like, you know, the decisions that I make, or I'm going to feel upset because certain people said certain things about me, and I let that get to me, you know, by, okay, I don't have to prove this person nothing wrong, or I don't care what nobody say. You know, I care. I cared about myself. I wanted to be something. So at the end of the day, I said, if this person said something to me or not, I still have to prove to myself that I can be somebody, because your biggest challenger, your biggest enemy is yourself. Because, you know, at times you go through things, you're like, oh, I can't do this, I can't do that. So at the end of the day, if you show yourself, look, I can do this, I can do that, it's, like I said, the sky's the limit.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But do you think that tactic from an adult perspective works for all young people?
Honestly, I would say no, it don't. Because if it did, I don't think we would be talking about it right now. And different people... Because different people, it just depends on the person's strength. They, you know, they willpower. They inner willpower. That's what it is. It's like if they inner willpower is not strong enough and it's weak. Not like I said, not to say, you know, somebody's weak, but if they're not strong enough to say, you know, yes, I can, there's really nothing nobody can do about it. Mm-hmm. You know, they're gonna feel the way they are, and they're gonna do what they want to do.
Right. So somewhere inside of you, it had already been instilled. I know that you mentioned at some point that your grandmother has been a source of encouragement to you. Do you think she had anything to do with that I can attitude that you carried on the inside?
Oh, definitely. She always believed, like, no matter what nobody said to her, no matter what nobody did her any kind of wrong, she was still smiling, she was still strong, and so she passed away. That's how she always been. Like, she always been like that happy-go person. Like, you know, no matter what, you know, Jesus loves you. You can curse out. She'll still say, Jesus loves you, you know? And that was something beautiful. I would always look at her like that. Like, you know, no matter what she's been through, she was always happy. She was still praising God. She was still, you know, just on a happy-go. I didn't understand what it was, but at the end of the day, when you grow up and you realize it, and as you get more mature, you understand, like, people's going to say what they want to say. People's going to do what they want to say. That's why there's evil and good in the world. So, you know, it's the only thing that you got to learn, how to overcome the evil and still do good to them and confuse them and just move on, you know? You can't make everybody happy.
Right. So there was sort of that anchor there. So even though you had the naysayers, there was something there that gave you that anchor, that core belief. And I believe that we all need someone like that in our lives. That is awesome.
Oh, definitely do. Definitely.
Right. So you get this 4-year scholarship, and off you go to Texas?
Texas. That was my junior college. That's where it was a 2-year school, so I went there. That's where I got my associates from.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah, and what was that experience
that experience was it was great, but like almost like another rough time in my life was where, like I said, I went there to play basketball, enjoy my time while I was there. I think it was in February of 2004. He was coming back from a game. We just won this big conference game, you know, to put us up on number one in the conference. And, you know, we high hopes, you know, champion title, national title. We see everything up ahead of us. We were trying to find season pieces. I guess we got lost on some road and trying to turn around. And we turned around. The reason I was in the first van, so I turned around. And I'm looking at the other van, you know, why they're taking so long. So I guess he left his phone in my van. So I ran across the road, gave him the phone. And I guess he got on the phone, and he didn't see the there was a truck. And I don't know why. I seen the 18-wheeler coming down. So I'm like, okay, why he taking so long? The 18-wheeler coming. Why he not turning in time? So by the time the 18-wheeler turned, like, came past our van, and by the time I heard, it was just the worst sound of my life. I can't even explain. It was just a tire screeching, a van flipping, and then you could hear the engine that make a nice little sound for the rest of the time. So I was just like, I was just shocked. So I was the first one out the van. I think it was about 8 people, 9 people that was in the other van. Every last one of them was hurt. Two of my teammates died. One of them died on the scene. The other one lost his life maybe about an hour after they took him to the hospital. So I didn't really sleep for like 3 days straight.
Ooh.
And it was just like the worst time of my life. And I was just like, at the end of the day, I was that anchor again. Like, you know, how my grandmother was, you know, no matter what sadness, no matter what was happening, she was still that person that looked. She used to put that battery in your back and like, look, you can still go on. You can still move on. So I was like the spokesperson for my school. I was the spokesperson for my team. I cheered my team on. And they wanted to quit the season. I said, look, at the end of, if I was not here, I wouldn't want y'all to quit. So I believe they feel the same way. And so we finished the season off, and, you know, we lost in the second round in the conference championship, only with 6 guys and maybe like 5 walk-ons. So we stood hold on, you know, as strong as a team. And to this day, I still, you know, I have a great bond with all the guys that was in the van. They all thank me because they're like, they didn't hear my voice or, you know, they thought they was there. And I said, there's no need to thank me because I can't take it or give it to you. So I was like, you have to thank the man upstairs. But they said, you know, just for me being there, being a bigger brother, because I was older than everybody because I went to college around like 20, 21. So everybody was still like 18. You know, I was the oldest one there. So
okay. They
looked at me as their older brother. So I was like, you know what? I'm just doing what somebody I wish somebody would have done for me. So just like I'm just giving back. You know, I know how to feel to be neglected and not, you know, feel love. So I was just giving that I did all that I was missing to somebody else. So.
Wow. So here you're approximately 20 years old, and in these 3 years of your life, you've lost 3 people.
Yeah.
Three. Wow. So did you take any time off of school, or you just had it straight through? Because that was towards the end of the – well, that was, you said that was in February?
February of 2004. So I graduated again from college. My mom was happy again. She came up, and I was supposed to go to, like, all these big-time Division I schools. As, you know, as we spoke before, you know, all the colleges, like, yeah, we want you. And then as the time got there was no coach, no scholarship, no nothing. So now I'm thinking, like, okay, what am I do now? So one of my teammates went to a school in North Carolina, and he said the coach is looking for a shooter. I told him about you. You know, won't you send him a tape? I sent him a tape. I gave him no less than a day or two. He gave me a call, like, do you want a scholarship? I'm like, who is this? I guess, like, are you serious? Like, yeah, I'm dead serious. Do you want a scholarship? I said, sure, why not? He sent me a scholarship the next day. I had a scholarship to go to Elizabeth City State University. A basketball scholarship, so.
Wow. And as much as you had surprise negative things, there were surprise blessings as well.
Oh, definitely. A lot of surprise blessings. And I was just overwhelmed and happy. I was like, you know, I don't care what school it is. I don't care if it's Boohoo University. I'm going to school. I don't want to go back to New York. That's all that mattered. So when I finally went there, it was about 6 hours away from my house, too. So, you know, it was in North Carolina, so it wasn't that bad as me being in Texas. None of my family could come to my game. So it was pretty well, you know, it was pretty good that I can, you know, I was driving back and forth to school, you know, when I had days off, or, you know, I would drive back and forth, drive back and forth, drive back and forth. So it was pretty good. So it worked out for the best. I was closer to my family and everything, so just in case anything was to happen like it did in Texas, my family don't have that much far to travel, or, you know, because one of my teammates that died, he's from Africa, so all his family had to come from Africa all the way to Texas. So it's just,
wow,
you know, it was pretty tragic. So, but, you know, at the end of the day, I loved it, went there, enjoyed myself, you know.
And graduated.
Yes, that's the most important thing. That's the most important thing. You know, make sure I got that paper at the end of the day.
I enjoyed it. What it really impresses me is that not only your passion for the game, but your compassion, the degree that you chose in special education. What was it that prompted you to choose that area?
I was in special education. I couldn't read or write when I was about 4 or 5, and how I learned, honestly, I'll be honest with you, nobody taught me how to read. I mean, out of all the foster homes, even the one I am now, nobody taught me how to read or write, and I lie to you not. So what it was, I used to sit there and sound the words out. I'll practice, and to the end of the day, I just learned how to read and write on my own. And like I said, I ain't had no mom or no dad to sit me down, or nobody teach me how to write this and write that. Because to this day, I look back at my old work, and I'll laugh, like, seriously, this is how I used to write? You know, to be either fourth grade or third grade, and it's like, what was so funny? I can't think of it. But it was like, I ran to cat to see mouse. Like, you know, it's just things I was writing. I'm like, did I really write like this? And it was just so funny. So at the end of the day, it's like, I want to better myself. So special education wasn't a hard thing, because in special education, that's what you're doing. You're working to better other kids and to better them in their behavior, to better them in their weak subject, to better them in life, to better them in their, you know, in whatever they do that they are in special need of, you know. So I just like, I don't think that should be a hard subject or a hard, you know, major for me to master or to give back to kids.
That's just so beautiful. And the other part of that is that you managed to find balance. A lot of young people either go totally, you know, academic and become so serious to not have to feel anything, or you have those who go really more with the artistic and sort of the free spirit thing, which I have no problem with, but you have a balance in both. You know, you can, you know, the part where you get the physical workout and just the high from being able to do the sports, and then you have the academics so that you can share your heart with other people. And that, to me, is just wow. I'll be honest with you.
I will tell anybody this. Now, this is why I balance both. To some people in life, you say, okay, how do you balance two things in your life, or how do you balance one thing in your life, or how you – all that matters, are you happy doing what you're doing?
Hello.
The same thing I can ask you, Missy. Are you happy? Because if you wasn't happy doing what you're doing, I don't think you'd have been doing it for 20 years. You know what I'm saying? So I tell people, you can make $1 million. If you're not happy, you're not going to be happy. I don't care how much money's coming in or whatever. So I was happy playing basketball. I love playing basketball. I love working with kids. I enjoyed, you know, doing what I was doing. So if I didn't enjoy it, it wouldn't have been a perfect balance. So for people mm-hmm. that are listening, like, you know, how did he do it? Why is he doing it? Or, you know, how did we be able to do it? It's because I love doing what I was doing. If you don't mm-hmm. love it, don't do it.
So that would be mistake to young people who are looking for a life career is to find something that you enjoy.
And you love doing. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. I will wake up every day to do this. This is what I want to do every single day. If that's what it is, then do it.
Yes, yes. And it takes some time to be able to find that. And it takes people who are willing to support you, not totally financially, but support you in that search for. And I just feel like I'm just so blessed because I've always, for the most part, enjoyed the work that I've done. And now the better part about getting older, I can set my own schedule. I can do it when I want to, because I've never been much of a morning person. But now I can do it, and like here it is. Well, it's almost 10 o'clock your time. I'm working at 10 o'clock East Coast time. But I think to know that there are always options, and not to say that you have to stay with anything. And anything that you don't like, if it's just a means to an end, just consider it a stepping stone and keep your vision high. Keep your eye on the prize. That is just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Tell us about, I almost said the Harlem Globetrotters.
About the Harlem Wizards?
Yeah, the Harlem Wizards.
The Harlem Wizards, again, I mean, in life I met a lot of people. And I'm going to tell you, the reason I got as far as I did is people who I know that know somebody that know somebody that know somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Like my manager, I knew Cookie. Cookie knew you. I got you and me, you got connected. This is how I got on the radio. So it's like, it's not, you know, it's just, people understand in life is the connections and the bridges that you cross. And when you cross them, make sure you don't burn them.
Hello. Speak.
You know, with all the people that you meet, because you never know who you're going to need at the end of the day. And that was my always number one motto in life. I always respect everybody that I came in contact with. I always, you know, make sure I left a good impression on them. You know, like, I'm like, you know, that kid Castro, or, you know, that kid Courtney, you know, it's a good kid. Let's give him a call about so-and-so. Let's give him a call about this and that and third. And this is how I got connected with the Harlem Wizards. This is how I got connected with the movie Just Right. This is how I got connected with a lot of commercials that I've done. And, you know, a lot of big things that I've, you know, that I got paid for in life is people that I knew that knew me that was like, you know what, he's a good kid. You know, he's not that, you know, you won't have to worry about him. You know, you won't have to. You know, it's just having that good rapport with people. That's the only thing I had, good rapport with people. And then people just remember me, like, you know, I'm, you know, here he goes. You know, this is the kid that, you know, that I like. He, you know, so four. And when I went to a workout with the Harlem Wizards, you know, like I said, I left another good rapport with them. I was a good kid. You know, I went there, did my job. You know, I had a good smile. Everybody loved me. And then from then on, it was just the sky was the limit. You know, so I enjoyed my 3 years while I was there. You know, I hurt myself maybe going towards my last year because I think I slipped on a pin or something and I tore one of my cartilages in my knee. So, but, you know, yeah, so, but I mean, to this day, I still do games with them here and there. Now, if they need another player, they'll call me, you know, ask me to do games with them and stuff like that. So I still, you know, to this day, I still play with them if they, you know, if they definitely needed me.
Wow. So you've had awesome experiences. The other thing, you've traveled outside of the country.
Yeah, went to Taiwan. That was like the best time of my life. Some people over there treat you like a king.
Yes, where did
like
you travel?
They definitely did. Like, we got off the bus, and it's like almost about 200-300 people, like fans, like, want to take pictures and want this and want that. I sucked it all in. I went through the crowd, enjoyed with them, laughed with them, played with them, and, you know, it was a good thing. So, you know, they definitely remember me because I was always like the last dunker on the Wizards to wear. I'll do like a dunk off and I throw the ball in the air. I take my shirt off and I dunk it. And then all the girls and everybody was screaming for my jersey and my shirt. So I had to rip it off every time and I give it to the crowd. So, you know, my teammates made fun of me. Like, oh, you gave it to a guy one time. And they're like, you know, just, you know, they were just teasing me. But I definitely enjoyed it. It was like the best experience of my life. But the only thing
I missed that. I asked you the question. I got slightly distracted. Where were you when you traveled?
Taiwan.
Okay.
Taiwan, Taipei. Yeah, we went to like 5 different cities in Taiwan. I think it was like Taipei. It was a whole bunch of it was beautiful. There was like beautiful scenery, like nice mountains, and I guess we went to an area where I think they made like the best mangoes. So like these mangoes was huge and delicious. So it was just like they took us there. It was really nice. But it was, to me, it just reminded me of New York, of Chinatown. They all ride bikes. They don't ride no cars really, and you know. But it was, like I said, it was like great people, like real humble, real, you know, respectful people.
And being exposed to a different culture. And that's
definitely
something I really want so much for our young people. And you and I spoke about that. It's about time to start wrapping up the hour. Can you believe it?
Oh, already? Wow.
Yeah. Time flies. You're having fun, huh? So, but we're going to have you back again. And we have the chat room. I am main event, it says. Please tell Castro main event is listening. He is very blessed, and what's a truly blessing is he never gave up. Actually, the person who's on the line says, you know who it is.
I do.
You do?
Nah, do I know who's on the line? Main event?
Main event?
Yeah, main event is one of the guys. I'll be honest with you, and I'm sorry that I did forget him, but he's one of the guys that when I think it was like 2004 after my accident, they was doing the N1. I know you probably heard of N1. They like world renowned basketball players, like one of, the best street ball people that you can ever. Him, Shane, Dribbling Machine, main event, half man, half amazing. They the best. Other best, as young kids, we was looking up to them, want to be like them. And they had an open run in Madison Square Garden. And main event and Shane definitely gave me a chance to make it in the building and play with them in Madison Square Garden. I think that was my first time ever playing in Madison Square Garden, and they gave me the opportunity to play with them. And like I said, to this day, I still play with different games with them and everything like that. But, that's one, real great guy, like real humble. For him to be a superstar, he's like a superstar of the street ball. He's like a real humble, real down-to-earth person, and real good guy.
Okay. Well, you want to say a shout-out to him because he is listening.
Yo, definitely shout-out to my man, Main Event, Shane Dribbling Machine, also my manager, Cookie. Like I said, for y'all don't know who Main Event is, go look it up on N1, and y'all know exactly who he is. One of the best dunkers and one of the best ball handlers at 6'4", at his age, and his side that's done it. Like, he's, one of the best, I can say, definitely. I used to always look up to him. He don't know that, but now he know now.
awesome. Is his first name Wally?
Yeah, Wally, yeah.
Wally Main Event Dixon. Okay. Thank you for listening, Main Event. I start to put thank you, M.E., because M.E. for me is Miss Evelyn, but I put M.E. for you, then I decided I would change it. And I know that we have Cookie in the chat room. I thought that she had actually called in, and it turns out that was him actually on the line. So I was waiting for Miss Cookie to get on the line because I thought she would have some input into this conversation. So, Miss Cookie, if you will call us at 424-675-8303, we will definitely hook you up.
That's my manager. A great person. Like, we met, we met at a basketball charity game. Matter of fact, when I played against, when I was playing against Main Event and them, the N1 team at the time, and I don't know how we bumped into each other. We started talking. I told her, yeah, I was adopted. And she's like, for real? I was too. Well, yeah, we was. And then from then on, the sky's the limit. And then I was like, you know what? I want you to become my manager. And she's like, okay, no problem. And then that was it. So, Cookie's really, really, really a real, real great person, real great person, real great person.
Yes, and believe it or not, we have yet to meet face-to-face, but I feel like we've known each other forever.
That's how it is. That's how she is, though. That's how she is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Actually, she's going to be our guest in a couple of weeks, so we hope you'll be back on the line to share her talk with us. So I'm trying to get
her. I definitely will.
Time to get on the line, and I think this is her. Sweet Cookie, is this you?
Hello, how are you?
We're great, how are you?
Good, I enjoyed the interview, great interview. Hi, Castro.
Hello, how you doing, Kirk?
Good, guess what, I am one of your biggest fans.
Oh, stop it, thank you.
And I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
And I know that the struggle and the journey has not been easy for you from one foster child to the next. I definitely appreciate your dedication and your strength.
Thank you.
Yes. And I just thank you for being just such a caring person and connecting. You're the actually, I heard someone speak of this about another friend. She said, you're just a walking Rolodex. A Rolodex with a heart. So thank you so much. Now, didn't you say when we were putting out the announcements that you had a question that you wanted to ask Castro?
Yes, I do, Castro. This is very important to the listeners because you've got a lot of followers and listeners out there. So my question to you would be, with all of the statistics and all of the odds against foster care success, what would you say has been maybe the force for you in continuing your success?
I told Miss E this is what I believe, and I don't know why. I guess when I was talking to Miss E at the time, it came to me. I always say my past or anybody's past is someone else's future. And where that came from is with my struggles, with my downs, with my ups, with my strong faces and my sad faces and my, you know, obstacles that I went through, which is my past, what I can help somebody else in their future if they're going through it at that time, at that present time, foster kids, teenage foster kids, people that's been adopted, people that's been in foster care. You know, my past is somebody else's future, so I know what I've been through in my past, I can help somebody else, you know, through their future, you know, help them out and believe that, you know, this is not the end of the road. It's much better than this only if you put your best foot forward and leave the rest behind.
Yeah, that's a good analogy because I think I could definitely connect and relate with that because I don't know if I hadn't went or traveled the road that I did, I really don't know what type of person I would be. So I could definitely relate to your statement because what you went through made you stronger and it makes you want to be able to help people more. So I can understand that. That's one question that I never asked you, and I just kind of wanted to get your opinion on it.
I said that would be a good book, too. My Past is Somebody Else's Future.
Yeah, that is. Yeah. Write that title down. And
write
while
it down.
Write it down
and come to Heart Talk Publications.
Listen, that was two plugs that just went through. And listen, I saw that Main Event had sent you a shout out. Let me shout out to Main Event. Shout out, Main Event.
Yes.
Ball for life. We love you. That's the other part of the dream team. We all stick together.
Yes,
that's Ball for Life family. We love you.
That is awesome. And it's so awesome to see people in general, but especially young people, supporting one another. And I just saw some of the comments that was on Courtney Castro's Jumpman's face. People are saying, you know, I'll be there, and, you know, don't be stuttering. And I think that's love. That is love. So I just want to say thank you to Main Event and other guests who are in the chat room but cannot actually chat because they are just a number of guests, I think. Well, some, unless they registered, if you can put some words in there, put them out there. So this
also, I will give a shout out to Angela Pena. She's listening to. That's my girl.
Angela, shout out to Angela.
Shout out to
Angela.
Yes. Miss E, while I have you on the line, Miss E.
Yes, ma'am.
While I have you on the line, I definitely want to recognize the good work that you do. So many people don't know what you do, and you do a lot in terms of support of foster care and adoptee children and just connecting people within the system and things of that nature. And so I believe that you offer a huge platform for people like us to even tell our story and things of
that
nature.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Exactly.
And thank you for making it possible because even as much as I might want to do it, if people did not, you know, speak up, come forth, or respond to the call, I'd be sitting here talking by myself. So thank you. We each follow our calling and we each rise to the occasion, we are creating what it is we came here to do. So I just appreciate you so much and looking forward to meeting you. Say that again?
I definitely want to thank you, too, for having me on. Definitely. Thank you.
You're more than welcome. You're going to get tired of me.
I think we need to make it a world tour and have, like, a panel in different cities and, you know, I guess have like you said, instead of having it once a month in the, on the radio, it has to have once a month in a different city, and to where we have kids that's from all over that's been through that can probably relate with us, and have big conferences every month, and have a panel to where, you know, we're talking people that's been through it, people that's been successful, people that have not probably been successful. Just try to get this bigger, you know, let's shoot for the stars right now.
Go beyond foster care month, and we do that. We go beyond just the month of foster care. So does Miss E. We mentor every day. We are mentoring somebody's child in some shape or form. It's just that foster care month, because it is, you know, nationally recognized, it does get a lot of attention during the month of May. But, you know, that doesn't stop us. We continue to do, you know, what we do.
And what we want to do is raise the awareness and the consciousness and the activity and involvement of the village year-round, because you hear about it in May and, of course, in December when it's Christmas time.
Exactly.
So we want people to know that our young people have birthdays every month. They have expenses every month. They need support and pats on the backs and a shoulder to cry on every month. It never ending. So we want people just to be very aware and to do something. As our quote is, do something special for a child's heart. Speaking of which, let me just put in another plug for Foster Focus Magazine. Our sponsor for this month is doing some awesome things and being a great support to us. Give our listeners both your websites and contact information, both you, Castro, as well as Miss Cookie.
Okay. We're together, so if you want to get in touch with Castro, Castro could be found at www.cookiehumphrey.com.
Okay.
Go ahead, Cookie. I'm sorry.
I'm putting this in the chat room so that people will have it. And when this call is over, if you will put that information also on For a Child's Heart Facebook page, as well as Miss Evelyn's Facebook page, and that'll be a real good hookup. So we got
www.cookiehumphrey.com, and Castro is featured on the players page.
Okay. See, I told you were a player. Wonderful. Well, this has been just a precious pleasure for me. And you know what? You said it. You want to do something monthly? You ain't said nothing but a word. So when I pull your phone up and start, you know, putting things out there and tell you to get this together and get that together, don't be hemming and hawing.
She's talking to you, Castro.
I don't have a problem whatsoever. I told you I'm here for you if you need me.
It's like, I can't even dribble, so I can't jump no hoops. But I'll put on a jump to it. So thank you so much for both of you. And do you have any closing words?
I hope people that was listening that I reached somebody, touched somebody. And like I said, stay blessed, be blessed.
Wonderful. And thank you for doing something special for a child's heart. Hope everyone will go forth this week and bring people's attention to the plight of our youth and put out some positive information. And if not, encourage someone. And if you need to know more, like there's a commercial here that says not everyone can be a foster parent, but everyone can help a foster child. And I'll usually add, not everybody should be a foster parent. However, if there's something that you feel that you can do, you can call your local Department of Social Services, but email us, heart, at forachildsheart.org. That's heart at forachildsheart.org. And we can hook you up. So good night, everyone, and have a wonderful remainder of the evening and week. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
rivers flow from the tears she cried. She cried.